I'm calling Ben on the phone, cause he's got to answer the phone, cause it's calling Ben time. Oh yeah. What do you think?
Paul Goody.
Hey, Ben Lawrence, how's it going?
How you doing? Hang on a sec.
Good.
How's your audio? Can you hear him?
Yeah, I can hear him. Hi.
Hey, Paul.
Hey!
So, like I said, last week we have a special guest. Your friend of mine, Emily Cershon, is here.
Hi.
Emily, hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We almost, by a hair's breadth, had a fourth person on this call.
Oh, really?
My friend Jeff Soule, friend of the podcast,
yeah,
first guest on the podcast, is in town, and it's his birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Jeff Soule.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Jeff. He's actually 46. I don't know if he wants me to say, but it shows you that I'm older than him, which is cool because I never knew that. But I should have worked it out sometime within the last, almost 40 years that we've known each other.
Wow.
And then there's also the dog, Edward, is here.
Yeah,
but he probably will not be saying much.
Yeah, we also have a dog in studio with us. Jean-Luc is here.
Oh,
and Paul,
but
did you
no
ever meet
revenge,
Jean-Luc?
Hey, Jean-Luc. I think
I think you moved away before Jean-Luc. When did you get Jean-Luc?
Like just over 2 years ago.
Okay, so yeah,
Paul, that would have been before my time,
like 4 to 5 years ago,
or after my time.
Yeah.
Sorry, yes, after my...
After your time.
It's like I passed, and I'm speaking to you from the beyond.
Spooky.
Which is the Midwest, so there you go.
So, actually, before we start talking about dogs, I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about dogs today. The reason why Emily's on the show is because you put out a call on social media. You're like, hey, I want to be on your podcast.
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
Because I think it was like The Onion that like put out an article that was like, you know, every podcaster in America looking for a podcast person to be on or a guest to be on their podcast this week. And I like thought that was really funny. And I was also like, I never thought about the other side of people who are like looking for guests to be on podcasts. And then, I was talking to my friend about goals or whatever, like, you know, like life goals, bucket list stuff, and we like encourage each other to make lists. And so like I just like randomly put on there like be a guest on someone's podcast, and then I was looking over that list the other day and I was like, I can solve this problem right now. Like yeah. I bet I can just put it on the internet.
Yeah,
but now you know that our podcast is like maybe half a podcast, right? I mean, we have a problem, and that's that we have two guests, basically. Oh, no. Derek Shook is calling me, you guys. You don't know Derek. He's a friend of mine. I am not going to conference him in. Okay. I'm going to just text him.
Do you need to leave an answer this first?
No, I don't. Okay. No. I like Derek. If you're listening to this, I like you, but this cannot be urgent. Derek is someone that I used to work with. He no longer works with me. He's a cool guy. If some news article comes out and Derek has done something bad, he is a cool guy to me and has been a cool guy to me since I've known him. Any future crimes, I don't know about them.
One of the ongoing themes of our show is, conspiracies and paranoia.
Oh.
That's mainly from Paul.
That's all me.
Yeah. So,
pretty much. Ben is the voice of reason.
I try.
Well, Ben and Jenna, everyone else is the voice of reason.
Where do you think? Where do you think Edward stands on it?
Edward actually gives me his unwavering support, pretty much. So there's one person in my corner.
So. One before we start talking about dogs, one final question, just so our listeners get to know who Emily is. Because the only confirmed listeners I know of this podcast are Steve McCandless and Jennifer Pratt, who all already know who you are. But for anybody else who might be listening, who are you?
Oh, gosh. Wow, what an open-ended question.
Well, first off, what's your connection to Annex?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've done a bunch of stuff at Annex over the last 10 years. Not so much in the last year or two, but mostly like set design and props. And then I did marketing for a while and technical direction. Anyway.
Hey, I did marketing too.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have that in common.
Paul was part of the three-headed marketing hydra back in the day.
Yeah, and so before Twitter came out, so that was easier, probably.
I don't even think we were in this building yet. Did you work when we were here at 1100 East Pike?
If I did, it was at the very tail end. It was mostly when we were itinerant.
Right.
For sure.
Cool.
The big thing that I remember was the Changeling.
Yeah, that was at the Rendezvous.
Stuff like that. Things that were at other places other than actually Annex.
Right. So let's talk about dogs. So Jean-Luc is what kind of dog?
He's a golden doodle.
A golden doodle. And he's all black. He's got these cute little gray hairs everywhere. And he's only, 2.5? Mm-hmm, and he's already starting to get, I noticed earlier today, some gray hairs on his muzzle.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Why did you decide to get a dog, Emily?
Whoops. I don't know why not.
Oh, sorry.
Get a dog. I think it was like,
I'm having trouble. I'll be right back.
Bye.
I'll just keep going.
Yeah.
Something weird is happening.
Is how I feel.
Right.
But hey, Derek Shook, this is Paul Goody. Sorry, Mr. Call. Right. And then I accidentally called you while I'm in the middle of my podcast. You're not on the air, don't worry.
Finally like,
but anyway, sorry, Mr. Talk to you later.
I'm just going
to
do it.
And you got him with a puppy. Yes.
Sorry about that, guys. Really quick, Emily, the way that we do the podcast is we record our audio separately and then stitch it together. So while you guys were talking, I left a message for Derek because I accidentally called him and I couldn't figure out how to hang up and switch over to you guys. Perfect. So I left a message on his answer machine. Yay!
So while you're talking about getting getting Jean-Luc, we're going to hear audio of Paul giving a message to Derek. And you got him when he was...
I'm really sorry.
Did you... no worries. Did you... how did you find him?
I think like Google.
Who's my dog?
Like breeders, like of golden doodles, because I knew I wanted a golden doodle.
Yeah.
So Google solves everything.
Paul, how did you guys find your dog? Well, first of all, Paul, what kind of dog is yours? In case this is the entry point for people listening.
Yeah, just in case, because I think we are going to get at least one new listener probably out of this, at least, if not more. My dog, Edward, is a, they have a couple of different names for them. The one I like the best is Chiweenie. He's half Chihuahua, half, Dachshund. He looks like a Jack Russell Terrier puppy, kind of.
Aww.
And he is the sweetest, 6 pounds. And then the story, I don't know, Ben, have I told this on the podcast before? For anyone who has, just sit through it. I'll make it quick. Jennifer lost her wallet on a train. And so we went to St. Louis to retrieve it after her cards were found. Right. They stole the wallet, though. They kept the wallet. And on our way back, we stopped off at PetSmart. And they were having an event. And we thought that all the dogs were gone. But we went down another aisle, and there were dogs, and there was this guy, and his name at the time was Little Man. He was 6 pounds, 2 years old, so he's never really going to get any bigger. And when we were concerned about renaming him Edward, they're like, oh, he doesn't know what his name is. So that was great. And Edward is now... almost knowing when we're talking about him.
And you had to introduce him into a home that also had a cat. How's that going?
Ooh.
Okay, so here's the latest. He doesn't bark at the cat, but he has started following the cat around, which the cat isn't great as far as dealing with it goes, but she's bigger than him.
Yeah.
So there's never going to be a problem, I don't think, unless she starts bullying him. And so far, he's kind of oblivious to her murderous intentions. So,
right.
I think we're going to be okay.
We,
Go ahead.
When I was a kid, we got a dog, a new dog from the pound, and we had two cats, and he was a full-grown Newfoundland, and we didn't know, you know, how he was going to behave around other animals. We didn't have any other dogs at the time. I told this story last time where we actually lost two dogs in the woods of Oregon, and when we were trying to figure out how to get them back, when we were at the pound, we just got another dog. So, PS of that story, we got our other two dogs back. So, turns out we ended up with three. But
wait, so then you had three dogs and two cats.
Then we had three dogs and two cats. But when we were introducing Baloo into our home, my dad walked him in on the leash, and the cat, one of our cats, Merlin, was in the kitchen. And Baloo just went after him. And on hindsight, we probably could have done this better. But the cat,
jeez,
the Baloo, we had this like a thrust kitchen, right? It's a three-sided kitchen. And the cat did like a
Roger
Rabbit thing and like went up on the counter and like basically ran around the entire thing on the wall, seemingly, and out the other side. And the dog just went after him. And, yeah, so we could have handled that better, but eventually they came to tolerate each other, the cats and the dog. But it was pretty funny to watch the cat just rip around the kitchen. He knocked a couple cups off the counter. I wasn't too mad.
Oh, man.
So real quick question.
Yeah.
Baloo.
Yeah.
Named after Baloo from The Jungle Book?
Yes.
Was Merlin named after Merlin from Sword in the Stone or from the Arthurian
just
legends?
General
I want to know
Arthurian
how.
Arthurian legend, yeah.
Okay, so Disney didn't have its hooks into your naming convention.
No, my sister, when we got Merlin, my sister insisted on naming him because she was really big into Arthurian legend at the time. Baloo, I think my dad named or renamed. I don't know if what his original name was, but he, you know.
A bear of a dog.
A bear of a dog.
So, Emily.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to plug?
To plug.
Let's get that out of the way. Anything coming up that you're interested in people knowing?
That's a great question. No, I don't. I'm not working on anything. It's really great to have a lot of time. But yeah, no.
Working on stuff is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I gotta say.
Yeah, but related to cats and dogs, yeah. Tonight,
yes.
We are picking up two foster cats.
Right.
What?
Yeah, and Jean-Luc has never lived with cats before. I'm really excited to see how that goes. I have these visions of them becoming best friends and snuggling, but but hopefully it's not like your experience with Baloo instead.
You'll probably have you'll probably do better when introducing them to each other. Foster cats, are they full grown cats?
Mm-hmm, they're seven.
Oh. Cool.
Are they related, the foster cats?
Yeah, they're siblings.
Okay, well, there we go. Wait, did you already say they're siblings or did you say they're seven?
I said they're seven.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. I often can't hear exactly, so I make guesses, and sometimes they turn out pretty well. But
well, if you had guessed either one, then they're both true, so that works out.
Hooray!
Hey, speaking about guesses that turn out being true, Ben, guess what?
What?
I got news that corrections have been submitted.
Uh-oh.
Ooh.
Is it corrections time already?
I think we might as well get corrections out of the way so that we can spend more time talking to Emily.
Why don't you tell our listeners and Emily what corrections are?
Yeah, I'm going to use Emily as a literary device to explain to the users. Users, oh my gosh. sorry, I work in software. That's to explain to the audience. Hey, Emily.
Hey.
So I don't know if you've ever listened to the podcast before.
I listened to some of it today, so that I would know what was going on.
The basic thing is it's pretty freewheel, and we have a couple of different segments, but they're all kind of short. The biggest segment and the most important is, at one point in time, Ben and I had a discussion about the fact that people don't actually know things anymore. They look them up and think that they know them, but it's not exactly the same as knowing things. So in the podcast, which is an hour, we try to not look anything up. Oh, this is also based on one time. I spent the entire podcast looking something up, and Ben had to sort of fill time while I was just like, oh, excuse me, hold on.
There's a whole show where Paul was distracted because he was trying to find something.
Oh, man. I feel like you can get into like an internet hole that way, too.
Yep.
Exactly, yes. And so we ended up with this rule. We don't look anything up while we're talking, which means that we sometimes get things wrong. And we set up an email address, which is, get ready for it, Ben's email at yahoo.com at gmail.com. So we made it very difficult to write to us,
right?
Because you got to sort that out. But people can write to us and submit corrections. And luckily, you know, a couple people have written in sporadically, but we have one like true ringer and great fact checker, Jennifer Fact Checker. You might also know her as Jennifer Pratt, my wife. And she has sent us corrections.
Perfect.
And now we're doing a segment that we call Get Ready for the Ding. See if you can chime in with us. A segment we like to call Corrections.
Ding.
Ding.
All right.
That was pretty good.
It's our one music cue in this show. All right. So, you brought up the movie Ink. I don't remember why. I guess.
Oh, yeah. Like yeah. I just watched it and I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. So, number one, Jennifer says Ink, the movie, is available on Amazon Prime, but not on Netflix.
Oh, I said it was on Netflix. Ah. I was wrong.
A funny thing about
everybody.
Amazon Prime versus Netflixing, today it came out that a bunch of users had petitioned Netflix to remove the show Good Omens because it promotes Satanism.
Oh, yeah.
But the show is not on Netflix. It is on Amazon Prime.
Which is great.
And people were saying that that's a great show. I should watch it because I love me some David Tennant.
Oh, yeah. David Tennant is great in it. He does a really, really good job, in my opinion.
Yeah. We also talked about this movie that our friend S.J. Chiro is directing, starring Tom Skerritt and Mira Sorvino. I couldn't remember the name of the movie, but I knew that she was filming it east of the mountains in eastern Washington. Well, apparently it's an adaptation of a book called East of the Mountains by David Gutterson.
That's great. And I know, and I think you know as well, Emily. SJ is a cool director around town, and it's nice to see her directing a big thing.
And she's also a former artistic director of Annex Theater.
That is correct.
All right,
And has been very helpful to us in our careers and all the things that we like to do.
Right. I can't remember, number three, I can't remember why we came up with this, but for some reason the phrase, and that's the truth, was...
We were trying to figure out who says it.
Trying to figure out if it was Lily Tomlin on Laugh-In or Gilda Radner on Saturday Night Live. Well, apparently Lily Tomlin had a character named Ruth Ann on Laugh-In who said, and that's the truth. And I guess that's the character where she sat in the large rocking chair.
Yeah. And I believe that she also guested as that character on some Muppet property or something on PBS.
Yes, I want to say that her telephone operator character was on Sesame Street.
Yeah.
One ringy dingy.
That definitely was, yeah.
Two ringy dingy.
For sure.
All right.
The thing that you're hearing in the background, I'm taking Edward out because he was sniffing around like he might do something.
Are you still trying to housebreak him?
Yeah, he's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
We're over the impression that he didn't really do much as far as housebreaking went when he was a little pup.
Finally...
Yeah.
Finally, number four. I don't remember this at all, so it must have been something you said. Number four, the T in That's the T. Did you say something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mentioned that. Because Betty hates it when I say it. Because I say it in the wrong times, in the wrong places, because it makes Betty mad, and I like making Betty mad for some reason.
Hashtag being a dad. Apparently refers to actual tea. It's a reference to having tea with girlfriends and gossiping. You can ask someone to spill the tea and what's the tea as well. I have not heard of any of these. I've heard spill the beans.
Oh. Spill where the beans, that that's the same thing when you're having beans with your girlfriends.
Yeah.
All right, and that's it. She says to keep it wrong.
Oh, thanks. And look, here's Jennifer right here. Hey, thanks, Jennifer, for sending those corrections. I don't know if you can hear it. Oh, boy. Edward is walking over to the cat, who is now sunning herself in the garage. So, yeah, apparently they are still kind of in a truce. No fightings. This morning he was messing with her a little bit past her tolerance level.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, okay, well, we're out by the garage now. I'm sure that's thrilling for you guys. So let's do more stuff with Emily. Emily, what is something that you know a lot about that you think that other people may not know that much about?
Ooh, a test.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I feel like I worked as a commercial building engineer for, 5 years. So I feel like my default answer to that question is buildings.
Yeah, that's something. Yeah, we have talked often about this, how when I was a low voltage electrical engineer, one of the skills that I did not have was just how to generally be on a construction site.
Oh.
Right.
And
you're not given like a test or a tutorial on how to behave while, you know, you're taught how to do your job, but basically not what the unwritten rules are of a job site are.
Yeah. So like, for instance, imagine a guy who's never really carried a ladder before being in charge of a 10-foot ladder and just send him onto the job site. It's pretty, pretty
like
nuts.
That's like some classic slapstick comedy.
Right.
Yeah, now that I think about it, it's possible that they did that on purpose. I'm not going to rule it out. What's like one fact about commercial building that you think people would be very surprised to learn?
Yeah, well, one cool fact that I tell people is like, well, because people are like, what is a building engineer? What do they do? And I'm like, oh, you know, they like keep things running. And like, I feel like people think of buildings as static a lot of the time. So like, what needs to run? But like, if you have a building that's over like 6 stories, you have to like pump your own water up into the building because the city water pressure only carries it up to 6 floors. So you have to...
Well, see... Sorry, I was like, that is something that I've never heard before.
Yeah, so like a little stuff that. You're like, oh, who makes sure that I have running water on the 10th floor? And it's like, oh, I did that.
Yeah, so this is something that, like, as you can tell probably by the first question I asked you, a building engineer isn't what I thought it was. I guess is the way to describe it. I thought a building engineer was somebody who went in when the building was going up and like used the principles of engineering to make sure it was constructed properly.
We're talking about.
Yeah, that's also an engineer for a building.
But what we're talking about on your case is it's somebody who's you're tied to that building by the people who run the building.
Yeah. Like I'm an employee of the property management company and like, I don't know. I kind of like the name building engineer because it's tied to like the word engineer as like a train engineer or like a naval engineer. It's like the person
that
runs the train. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're running the building basically the inside of it. Okay. So let's say for instance, this is a time where we're going to play something called That's Not My Department.
Perfect.
Okay, so hey, the phones are out in my building. Would you fix that?
No.
Like, if I call you and say, hey, I can't get a signal, that is not your department.
Well, I guess I would troubleshoot, like, what, like, whether it was, like, localized, because I have to figure out whether we call the phone company or whether, like, it's an internal problem. Because if it's an internal problem, it is our problem.
Okay. So that's good.
I got one, Paul.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
The building I currently am freelancing in is a 42-story building, and it has 18 elevators, not including freight elevators, 18 publicly accessible elevators. Each bank goes to a certain vector of floors.
Uh-huh.
So it seems like the one, because I have to go to almost the very top of the building, and it seems like only three of the elevators are working at a time. If the elevator's broken, do I call the building engineer?
Yeah. Well, you would call property management, and then they would probably call the engineering department. But then they have to call the elevator experts, because you have to have, like, special licenses to work on elevators.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, what you guys have heard in the background, maybe. Good boy, good boy.
I can see.
He went outside.
Okay.
Which was good. And so he got a pepperoni also.
No.
Oh,
which pepperoni. Is his favorite little treat. Okay. My turn. All right, I'm in the building.
Yeah.
And ceiling tile fell down and hit the desk of my coworker.
Mm-hmm.
Would I call the building engineer?
Oh yeah. Definitely.
Now, actually, this is a very important thing. I said, would I call the building engineer, but are you actually the point of contact, or would I call just the office manager, and the office manager would call you?
Yeah, I think you would probably, like, I don't know what your, like, office organization situation is, but you'd call your office manager, and then they'd call property management, and then property management would put a work order into the building engineers, and then I'd get a work order, and then I would show up and figure out why the ceiling tile fell.
Is your work order electronic in nature?
Yeah.
Like, do you work in a ticketing system?
Like a drive-thru? Where you just have the ticket comes through on the monitor and you have to order up?
I feel like I should make up an answer that sounds really cool. But no, it's just like, you know, some, like, really bad proprietary software made for building engineers that had just, like, you know, work orders where you, on your computer.
Okay, so this is a question about you specifically. Do you work in one building and that's your building? Or do you have several buildings that you're in charge of?
Yeah, well, I worked in, like, three or four different places when I was a building engineer. And most of the time, I would stay in one building. But a couple times, you know, it's like a portfolio of buildings and, like, your shop/office is in one building, but you have to travel depending on, like...
Yeah.
It depends on how often things go wrong. Like,
how often did things go wrong in downtown Seattle high-rises? Should we be concerned?
It depends on the building, because, like...
Yeah. Which building should I not go to?
Well, I worked for... Let's see. Oh, yeah. It depends. Like, some buildings are kind of just, like, sort of run down in the way where you're like, oh, the faucets are all drippy.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you're more worried about the buildings where you're like, oh, they're not changing the air filters on these, like, really critical areas that should have fresh air. Like, one time I worked for the building, 9th and Jefferson building, where they house the King County Medical Examiner. And the fans to the morgue stopped because the filters had not been changed. And I had to, like, emergency get in to, like, the dead people filter and figure that out when I had never done that before.
Now, is this something where they, like, they called your property management company or whatever, and they're like, our fans aren't working, and we don't know why. So you had to go in and figure out, oh, because your filters have parts of dead people in them?
They don't know their fans aren't working, like, because all they know is that the second floor smells like bodies, and, like, that. So then they call us and say, the second floor smells like bodies, like, something is wrong, and then we have to go on the system and figure out why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So here's another question sort of tied to that. How much of your job when you first started it was you were underneath someone else who kind of showed you the ropes and said, this is how you do stuff. And how much of it was there was a problem. They said, hey, go take care of that. You say, how do I do that? And they were like, nah, figure it out. And sort of just dropped you in the middle of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I had a pretty good balance of that. Because, like, the first job that I had was at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation building. And that building has, like, so much financial resources that there were, like, a lot of engineers for the amount of work. And so there was a lot of people available to help me do stuff.
And it's a relatively new building, too. So not that many weird things are going to happen.
Yeah, totally.
Is there like a holding area where you all sit and wait for something to happen, or are you kind of just wandering around the building?
No, totally. Okay. There's like, we're sitting and doing like other stuff, like, like logging energy usage or like, you know, whatever.
Gotcha.
There's a definitely.
So there
like
are
a desk
some
element
desk
to it.
Things that you would do.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But then also like rounds, like the first set of rounds that I had to do at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation was like, check the roofs. And it was like, I just would go on all the roofs of the buildings like every couple weeks and just like,
yep, they're still there.
Yeah. Are there any light bulbs out? Like, are there any dead seagulls? Like, I don't know.
How tall was that building?
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is only 6 floors.
Did you know that that is still more floors than most of the buildings where I live?
Really?
Absolutely true.
Paul's in Edwardsville, Illinois.
Oh. Well, I wonder.
The buildings, I think, top out at 4, I want to say. I could be wrong. I'm going to count, and I'll let our listeners know next time what the tallest building.
My apartment is only 6 floors, so now I know why they only build it 6 floors. That way they don't have to pump the water up to
probably.
Yeah.
I bet you know what, Ben?
What's that?
I think the tallest building is probably SIU. The college.
Right.
Which I don't think you saw, but I'm not.
No, I saw signs for it. Blair and I went to visit Paul and Jennifer and Betty last summer. And so they drove us around and we saw all the sites in Edwardsville.
Beautiful.
All two of the sites.
Yeah,
in
how long was the drive?
Now, I want to ask another question. Building engineer, no longer your profession? Is that correct?
Yeah, no longer. Yeah.
What do you do now?
Right now, I don't have a job, which is pretty great for the most part.
But you just finished something really cool.
Yeah, but I did one of those like coding boot camps. You know?
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
So can we talk about that for a second? What language?
It was like this. I learned 3 different languages over the course of three months. Yeah, and
give
so
them to
I
me.
Learned Python, C Sharp, and... No, I forget the last one.
What was it used for? Was it like Swift or...
I can't believe I thought about it.
Java?
No.
Go?
Oh, it was just TypeScript. It was just a version of JavaScript. That's why.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's good.
What kind of cool things did you learn how to build?
Yeah. Since everything was sort of like fast-paced and compact, we didn't build anything super cool. But I built a zoo tycoon game, where you can like, you know, build a zoo and have exhibits with animals in them. and then
that's kind of cool.
It was really fun. And then, I was getting really into like making zoo events so that like, you know, as the zookeeper, you'd have to handle like the weather and whatever. And the very first event that I made was that the animals would sometimes escape. And then, like...
Nice.
And then, like, while the animals were absent, you didn't have to pay to feed them, but they wouldn't contribute to the attractiveness of your zoo, but then they would get found and returned to you. But I, like, didn't really do a good job of, regulating how often that would happen, and so, like, the animals were just escaped. Like, you'd lose, like, an animal every day or two.
Nice.
Well, you know, there's that story about the orangutan who used to let the animals out of the cages and then lock himself back into his cage. He was a lock-picking orangutan.
For like a deniability?
Tell me more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now, unfortunately, this is Jennifer's story, which I'm stealing a little bit because she knows like details like which zoo it was and things like that. But yeah, apparently there's this older orangutan who had a piece of wire that he was able to use to unlock the cages that all these animals were in. And he would go around and he'd let all the animals out, open all the cages, and then he'd get back in his cage and lock it, which is pretty smart on one level. But on the other level, you're unfortunately leaving it so that you're pretty much the main suspect.
So right. I think. All the other animals? So, like, the zookeepers would get back and it would just be, like, chaos except the one orangutan that was, like, in his cage?
Yeah, and what I want to say also is that the number of animals that were in this particular area might not have been, like, that extensive.
Well, you're saying...
Like, I don't think there were lions and gazelle both being let out of their cages like that.
So you're saying...
It might have been a primate house.
In, you know...
That's a guess, though.
This orangutan being the only animal locked up leads itself for, suspicion to be the one who let everybody out. That's assuming the zookeepers thought it was immediately go to the fact that it was an animal that let all the animals out.
Oh, yeah, good point. And not good someone. Point. Yeah, it may not have been an inside job. But orangutans are cool. They, like, weave nests, sort of, in trees.
They're the spiders of the primate stuff like world. That.
I guess strips of, give them strips of cloth and they'll make hammocks, apparently. That's what I've heard, anyway. Now, let me think. So, let me ask you another question.
Okay.
Have you thought about using your theater background and your new programming background to make a game?
A theater game?
Like, what kind of game? I haven't thought about that.
Well, I don't know what kind of game. Here's the reason I asked a game in general. I've been getting back into text adventure games, which still exist. People who make them now don't make them for a really large audience, but there are things that are... Is somebody building a shelf where you guys are at? What's going on?
Jean-Luc's tail is hitting a cardboard box. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. No problem. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something.
No, it's Home Improvement Day over here.
He's also, like, breathing into our microphones.
Well, the thing that... Here's what I'm... This is sort of... Ben is going to know that this is familiar territory. I was thinking about how video games and theater and TV and all those things all kind of have the same basic goal, which is to recreate reality.
Right.
In a, like a small little pocket. Right?
Yeah.
Programming has sort of the same goals. Right? You're making another thing happen inside the computer with ones and zeros. So, and in theater, you're making this fake space where action happens. It's all like the idea, basically, I think, is it all sort of connects in some sort of weird way. So I was thinking,
well, it's all a form of escapism,
right? So you have these new tools, so you could actually use the computer world to build an experience for somebody.
Yeah.
Well, so it doesn't...
You've just invented virtual reality.
Yeah. Hey, wait a second. Oh, this will be perfect. The next thing you should do is write a game where you're put in charge of a building as the building engineer. And it's like Zoo Tycoon, but you're the building engineer, so all the things that would come up, right?
Oh, I've definitely thought about this one.
But then they get super weird. And you have to deal with, like, there's no gravity in this floor. You know, that kind of thing. I think that would be pretty awesome.
I like
ghosts.
That.
How does a building engineer get rid of the haunted fourth floor?
Oh, yeah, exactly. There's a vortex to the netherworld.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, I talked to Brett Fetzer, like, a while ago about creating some sort of performance that was also, it was, like, a performance treasure hunt hybrid. This was, like, before I went to coding bootcamp. But essentially, like, you would be guided around the city to, like, different areas, and then you would kind of all collect in one culminating performance area. But anyway, but I feel like that would be made way more interesting if it was combined with some kind of like phone app that knew where you were and could like give you events or information about the little quest you're going on based on your location. And then you could,
okay,
it could be like, you know, integrated with performance.
And get this, this would be sort of crazy, but I don't know what kind of programming like philosophy you were taught or anything like that, but you could totally do this. All right, so I'm not going to get into specifics, but the software that I have worked on in the past and everything like that, you have different components that work together, right? This module sends something to this module, which sends something back and all that kind of thing. What if, oh, Emily, listen to this. In your treasure scavenger hunt kind of thing, you are using the treasure seeker as a component in a larger system that works with the computer. So actually moving things from one place to another, right? They actually, the people themselves are your module that gets something to work. I can't say what it is exactly because I don't have your knowledge. But does that make sense at all? Like,
no, I don't. Like, I'm you not actually. Following.
So you're using the players of the game to act as elements of a code.
Right. Okay. So as an example, let's say just a really quick thing. You want to edit. You want to go through a loop, right? A for loop.
Uh-huh.
So you have your one, and it's increased to two, and then three, and then four, and you keep on going until it hits 10, right?
Okay.
By that increment. So there's another thing that's just checking to see. Okay, when is this incrementing? How long is it? And then it hits 10. It's a really simple example, but the idea is that the people themselves are fulfilling the idea of this function. So as an example, just a really quick example, let's say you have an app, and in the app, when you press the button, it gives you a picture of an animal. And that's all there is to it.
Okay.
But someone else has signed up to be part of your project as a drawer. And when the person just doesn't hit an animal, a person describes the type of animal that they want and enters it into the computer. The computer says processing. And then they get an email. Your animal is ready. And there is a drawing exactly of the animal that they wanted. But it's not the computer AI that's doing it. It's another person who's kind of the go-between between the computer and the person who made the request. And you could do that with, you know, because that's something that computers aren't great at, lateral thinking, right? So if you build humans into your program, but you don't let the people using the program know about it, I think it would be really freaky and cool for them.
What would be the, like, I'm trying to picture this as a game. What would you see as winning this game, or the end result, or the goal?
Yeah, it kind of sounds like it might be just a very slow game. Like, it's like if you know, it's like
okay.
The same concept of like emailing back and forth between people.
Oh yeah, like chess matches and stuff like that. How long those take if you do them by snail mail, sort of like that. Also, okay. If your goal is to get everybody all in one place, right?
Okay.
The idea might be, so you have, okay, this is off the top of my head, but you have someone take a picture on their phone and mail it to the server, right?
Okay.
And then somebody else gets that picture as a hint of where they're supposed to go next.
Oh, I see.
And like
crowdsourcing your clues.
Right. The computer
sends Ben a thing saying right north, and on, you know, and gives Ben a street address, right? Or two labels of a place to where to go. Ooh, actually, this is perfect. Emily, do you know about what three words?
No.
About what?
What three words?
No. What are you saying?
It's
what
an
three
app.
Words?
What three words?
Yep. It's an app called What Three Words. And What Three Words, this will be perfect for the thing that you are maybe thinking about doing, breaks every single 3 meter square in the world into three words.
There are enough. I just read
three
about this yesterday.
Words.
There's enough unique words in the American dictionary that you can have enough unique combinations to assign every 3 meter square an identifier of just three words.
Oh.
China, Mongolia is actually already doing this.
Huh. Yeah, exactly. So the idea is this. Your computer program, right?
Yeah.
Has a list of three-word addresses in Seattle. Person A is told to go to a certain place and write down three words. Person B is supposed to go to that place where the first three words were, and then put the three words that they find at that place into their What Three Words app and go to that place, so on and so forth. So people are procedurally going to the last place, which you know, eventually end up feeding them.
I see. So that's like a line of ants of people going to the specific squares.
Exactly. And in each square, you can also tell somebody to, like, leave this snack or do some, you know, everybody has their own little mission. So that because for the person leaving the stuff and leaving the clues, it's kind of fun. But for the person going on the clue hunt, when they get to a place and not only is there the next place they need to go, but there's a little snack for them, that gets really, that's kind of cool and exciting. For me, anyway, it would be. So it's like geocaching, sort of, also, except with consumable things. And then, again, the reason that people would be more interested than computers is that people can come up with stuff
on their own.
All right, so, Emily, now you have the outline of this game. Go work on it. Go make it.
You got it.
Yeah, it would be awesome. I would love to play it, even though I'm so far away. Oh my god!
No, you can play an online video game that was coded from over here. I'm
actually
sure you do that often.
Ooh, you know that would actually be cool, Emily. If you could work out a way for there to be like players, right, the people in the city itself, mm-hmm. and then helpers, people who don't live in the city,
yeah.
who can also do stuff
or like phone a
and
friend,
participate.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yes,
cool.
It's true. Oh man. I gotta tell you, Edward is freaking out.
Why is he freaking out?
He's I don't know, every once in a while he wants to play, but he doesn't know how to. I think I've covered this part. He doesn't know how to chew on a chew toy. He doesn't know how to chase a ball. So he gets excited and in a playful mood, but the only thing he knows how to do is run around and kind of bite at you a little bit with his mouth.
Well, do you have any like Edward-sized balls? Or do you just have normal tennis-sized balls?
The ball here, I'm going to do one thing, this isn't looking something up. I'm going to take a picture of Edward next to the Edward-sized ball and show you. Edward. Okay.
That was part, in his introduction to corrections, that's part of our whole thing, is we don't look things up during the show, because that would be cheating.
Right.
Even
so
though
Edward,
you see me check
Edward,
my email, write down notes.
Look at the ball. Wait, Ben. What? You what? You what now?
I checked my email during the show.
Oh no! Ben.
Sorry, you had to hear it like this.
Okay, so all right. Oh shoot! There's a picture of me holding a ball and no Edward.
Fascinating.
That was not great. Oh great!
Right now, Jean-Luc is pretty relaxed. He's just chilling underneath the desk here.
What a cutie.
I babysat. I dog sat Jean-Luc for a while when he was just a pup and couldn't be left alone all day. And every once in a while, we would go over to the park, you know, so he could go and do his business. And one day, I was over there on the play field, and it's like, I don't know, like 10 o'clock in the morning or something. It's a nice sunny day. And I'm running around with him and, you know, just getting him, giving him some exercise. And then a parks department worker yelled at me for because he apparently weren't allowed to have dogs on the play field. And he's like, that's $1 million play field. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I didn't know. But then I tried to find signs saying no dogs on the play field. And there's only one sign anywhere that is on the rules of play. When there's a game, keep your dog leashed so they don't run in on the field, like during a softball game or whatever. But now
Ben, one thing.
I don't know if you've been to Cal Anderson lately. It is not an off leash park, but the people of Capitol Hill have decided that it is. And so if you walk out there, if you walk out there now, I bet you there's 20 dogs off leash running and chasing balls.
Beautiful.
So, you missed one specific thing you could have done.
What was that?
Which would have been kind of great. Oh, this isn't my dog.
Recently.
Okay, so I'm. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Edward. This week I bought Jean-Luc a life preserver so that we could go swimming together. And I'm really excited about it. He really loves to swim, and it's one of the only things that actually exhausts him.
Wow.
Yeah.
But he can't. So if he can swim, why do you need the life preserver?
Because if we go to the beach and I throw the ball in the water and he swims out and gets it, that's fine and he gets exhausted. But if I want to go swimming with him, if I want to get in the water and go swimming, my swimming endurance is probably higher than his.
Okay.
In terms of just
continuing
to swim.
Being out there.
So I got him a life preserver so we could both just swim around.
Tell me you got him little floaties to put on his feet. Put on his legs.
No, I got him a life preserver, and then someone posted something that was a life preserver for dogs, but it looks like a mermaid. It has a mermaid tail on the back of it, and it has those iridescent scales, and I was I should have done that instead.
Still time.
Then he'll just have multiple life preservers.
Where would you go swimming with him?
I don't know. I was just thinking about Green Lake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Green Lake wouldn't be so bad. Okay, so I took a picture. I'm going to send it to you now, to Ben.
You going to email it or text it?
Text it.
All right.
So you can't really tell. I put it as close to him as possible. He really didn't want the ball next to him. He was sitting on a pillow, and I put it next to him, and he moved away from it, and he kept on going. So now he's on the couch. And he got his little rawhide bone, and the ball is next to him. I'm going to edge the ball closer to his face. Okay, there we go. Oh, he's got his paw on it. That's great. Okay, this might be a new...
Every time
it took that long?
I turn the Wi-Fi off because our internet is so terrible.
Okay. I have an even better photo of him looking at the ball in disdain. Why are you putting this here?
So I got a picture. Is he chewing on a chew toy?
He looks offended by the ball.
Yeah, he does. Get that ball away from me.
Yeah, this next one, just wait. It's like, oh, oops, I almost sent that to Ben Carlos. I have no idea who Ben Carlos is, even.
Well,
I'm sure he'd appreciate the picture.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind getting random dog pictures.
Right.
So now I've sent this to you. It says sent.
Aww. Oh, yeah. He is not impressed with ball.
He doesn't like it.
Doesn't like it. I think because it squeaks.
Oh, the squeaking is too scary.
I think the squeaking is offensive to him for some reason. It's quite possible. Speaking about the squeaking is offensive to him for some reason. Hey, Betty!
So at the end of every show, we have the Yelling for Betty segment.
Perfect.
Which is where we talk to Betty, George.
Okay, Betty, now there's another guest on today, and her name is Emily.
Hey, Emily.
Hey, Betty.
So,
Betty? I just got 6 teeth pulled today.
6 Whoa. Teeth?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many do you have yeah. left?
I don't know.
They were all baby teeth.
Well, that's good.
And Betty is 13 years old.
Well, that's
wow.
old for baby teeth. I can see why they were pulled.
She inherited Jennifer's teeth longevity. Jennifer also had baby teeth. I think her last baby tooth was gone when she was in college, I want to say.
Crazy.
Which is pretty interesting.
I had my wisdom teeth pulled when I was in college.
Oh, wow. That yeah, I had mine pulled when I was about Betty's age, so that goes to reason. But the big thing also is that Edward actually barked at Betty when she came inside today.
What?
Which is impossible because Edward is supposed to be Betty's dog.
Maybe it was barking of delight.
Maybe, yeah. What do you think, Betty? Maybe he was happy to see you?
Yeah. Just talking yeah. to you.
It is rude.
The
of
left
me.
Bottom corner of my mouth is still numb.
Yeah, I just realized it's kind of rude to me to make Betty talk while her teeth are all out. It's fun for me, but oh, she's glaring at me now.
We can't. You know, it's funny because that's happened to me before when you go to the dentist and you get like a cavity or 6 teeth pulled and half your face is numb and you think you're talking funny, you think you look funny, and everybody's like, nope, you look exactly like you look like and you sound exactly like you sound. But to you, it's yeah, so different.
Okay, there's this Japanese band who did this thing. They ended a concert by saying, who wants to be in a rock band, and had somebody play guitar, and then had somebody else play bass, and had somebody else play drums, and soon the band isn't on stage. It's just 3 people
okay.
playing instruments. I want to do something kind of like that, in which I'm going to step back, and Ben, let's have Emily and Betty
okay.
talk to each other without us saying anything.
Okay. Can I can't listen either?
Oh, wait. Maybe maybe we shouldn't listen. Maybe they should end the show. All right, keep it wrong, everybody.
Keep it wrong.
hi.
Hi.
This is weird. How are things going?
Things are really good. We're just sitting here. It's sunny outside where we are, and I got my dog here. He's wagging his tail. How's it going over there?
It's going good. I have a dog now.
I heard. Yeah, and you named him Edward, right?
Yeah, after one of my favorite DC villains, Edward Nygma, who is the Riddler.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So wait, you got your teeth pulled today?
Yep.
Like just now?
Well, not just now, like a few hours ago.
Okay, because it's probably like later where you are than it is here.
Mm-hmm. What do Ben and Paul usually talk about on this?
Oh man, I don't even know. Like, I think whatever they want. Like, what would you want to talk about?
How about that politics, am I right?
You're totally right.
yeah,
you're definitely right about that. I think we also have the power to end the show, so...
Oh, should we do that right now?
Yeah, I'd be cool with that, but it was really good talking to you.
Yeah. It's a pleasure doing business with you.
You too. You have a good day.
Yeah, so goodbye, everybody.
Okay, goodbye, Betty.
Make sure to drink lots of water and wear your seatbelt. And
do it wrong, right? Do you get things wrong?
Yeah, and keep it wrong.
There it is, yep. Okay.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, they hung up.
Dad, how do I turn this thing off?
All right.
Dad, how do I turn it off?